So, good morning. We have a lot of information about this year's budget. And I will say that for this year, there's a very good news. Good news in the fiscal stability and resources available for the state of California, but also cautionary warnings that by no means are we out of the wilderness. We have serious issues before us in terms of long-term liabilities, debts, and we must be very prudent in the way we spend public funds. But the good news is that we're putting $10 billion into the schools of California. After years of drought and cutbacks and pink slips for the teachers, we're finally being able to provide a substantial amount of new money for all the schools of California. In addition to that, we're expanding health care for millions of Californians, and we're protecting public safety through our realignment initiative, buying more prison beds to increase our capacity and comply with the court orders, and also spend more money on rehabilitation. So schools, health care, public safety, the three vital elements that a government owes its people, this budget reflects in a very strong way, a strong commitment to deal with public safety, health care, and education. Now, let me just explain a few things here. This chart over here very graphically represents the last 10 years. And as you can see, the red ink is far more predominant than the black ink. So up here is where the state was not in deficit. Down here represents all the deficits. Now, some people would say, because we have this little black mark there, that we should go on a spending binge. I don't agree with that. We see the lessons of history. Now, there's one more point that is worth looking at, and that's this chart right over here, which shows you the volatility of capital gains. Now, there's two points I want to make about this chart. One, starting back during the Reagan era, and during the time I was governor, Magin and Wilson, the gradual growth in capital gains was fairly modest. Starting about the 90s, we get a soaring in capital gains wealth. But of course, the capital gains, so this is part of the inequality growth that we're seeing. This is not does not reflect how wages grew. This is for that very small piece or part of our society that gets wealth from its stocks and its capital investments. But what goes up just as sharply goes down. It did that once, it did it again, and now it'll, maybe we're not quite sure what it'll do. But we know over time that that zigzag will follow us. Now, some people have not seen this chart and have not looked at the data. So they think because we're up here, it's time to spend. In fact, we had two governors that occupied the governor's office, and when they were here, they said, hallelujah, let's spend. Down it went. Because the problem up here is that if you make commitments to employee salaries, to programs that are ongoing, then when the revenue drops, you're in a hole. So then you have to borrow. And that's exactly what caused the second chart. And that's why one of the reasons, besides the recession, that we had all that. Now, I've already mentioned most of this, education, the health care. We eliminate $11 billion in debt. We build a lasting rainy day fund. We hold the tuition at the colleges flat. And we have $500 million for more prison capacity and offender rehabilitation. So the big story here is that we are investing in education. That's the big takeaway of the positive and the health care. But the second point is we got lots of long-term liabilities. So a lot of programs are very attractive and may have very positive values or may not, depending upon how when you get into them. But when you have this level of long-term liability, it isn't time to just embark on a whole raft of new initiatives when we still have this kind of liability. And that's the problem. California has a strong budget. It is a balanced budget, but it is by no means a budget free from liabilities. The teacher's retirement fund is an immediate and serious one. The wall of debt, that's 24.9. In this budget, we take it down to 13.1 because we're going to pay off the deferrals to local government. So all in all, this is a wise allocation of the public funds, and it does represent prudence in how we proceed. And prudence is never easy. When the money's in, people want to go for it. And we've tried to keep it very measured. And that's really the story, and will be the story of the coming year, how we're able to work with the legislature, with the advocate groups, to maintain our long-term long-term path in reducing liabilities but investing in the basic services. Be glad to take any questions.
Extension of the prison deadline.
Say it again.
What gives you the confidence?
Well, because we've been negotiating with the various part of the emissaries of the judges, and I think we're getting very close. We hope we are. And if we aren't, we have the capacity to buy out-of-state beds as well as in-state.
What do you expect the compromise to be?
Well, we're in discussions, and generally in these kind of negotiations, they'd rather have us get to the final proposal, and then we can announce that.
Governor,
can you address proposals for transition to kindergarten, and then separately, yeah, are you planning to declare a drought?
Will I address the budget speaks for itself, and I have no comment on other programs beyond that, other than to say I certainly will listen to legislative leaders and members as they make their proposals. But again, wisdom and prudence is the order of the day. And when you see this kind of liability, one has to hesitate before anything too major. All right, the second thing is the drought. We already have the drought task force. I facilitated the exchange of water. Governors can't make it rain, but we'll do everything that is humanly possible to allow for a flexible use of California's water resources.
Governor, can you talk briefly, since you talk about prudence is never easy and it's hard, and you're preaching prudence today, can you explain a little bit of the thinking again on high-speed rail and the use of the cash trade money? Because, if I may just say, you have critics, as of this morning, on both sides of this debate, supporters of the train and clearly opponents of the train.
Yeah. No big project, whether it was the Golden Gate Bridge, the Transcontinental Railroad, or the Panama Canal, was free of very strong criticisms, skepticism, and attack. So that goes with the territory. This is a big project. It was started by my predecessor, something that I had proposed and talked about when I was governor the last time. There is no doubt that California will have millions more people come to live in the state. Many of them will live in Central California. To just add more freeway miles, particularly when already vehicle miles traveled last year was 331.8 billion vehicle miles traveled. We need alternatives, and transit and high-speed rail are part of that mix. And the program that I have set forth strengthens the local rail, the commuter rail, between California, San Francisco, and San Jose, in the Southern California, between in the Los Angeles and Southern California area. It reduces greenhouse gases. It ties our California together. We are divided in many respects, north and south, coast, and the center of the state. We have to pull together to form a greater community. And the high-speed rail serves all of those functions. And that's why I think it's in the public interest. And using the money from cap and trade, which is the results of deterring greenhouse gases, is very appropriate. While it's also appropriate to spend a lot of that cap and trade money in the way that I proposed, in lower income communities and dealing with a lot of pollution and greenhouse gases. But there's no doubt that the high speed rail is a reducer of greenhouse gases, an enhancement of the quality of California life, and a bringing together of the various regions of our state.
And so to those who say you're trying to prop up a system that you can't spend money on the train now with the court rulings and everything else?
Well, the alternative would be not to spend the money. And we do need that money, and we're going to spend it. I mean, you know, we are in an age of minds that aren't, you know, no one's talking about the Marshall Plan or putting a man on the moon or the Transcontinental Highway. But I think California is still that generator of dreams and great initiatives, particularly in the private sector, but still also in the public sector. And I think high-speed rail is worthy of this state. It said on the building, bring me men to match my mountains. Another way to say that, give us the dreams to match our capabilities. And I think the high-speed rail fits into that, and I think the cap and trade is a very good source for that. And, you know, it's not the general fund. It's coming right from sources of pollution and going right to reduce pollution. Yeah.
Governor, the state teacher retirement system has huge unfunded liabilities. Why is there no money in this budget to address that?
Quite frankly, how we do that, how much from what funds, what do the teachers do, what do the school districts do, what is the how does the state handle this, is going to be quite contentious. And I've set forth a period of time to meet with all the stakeholders and work it through. It's going to be daunting. It has to be done. And sometimes it's hard to get things done until people really see the disaster ahead. So I'm fully aware of it. If the legislature can do it this year, fine. I think it's going to take a little longer. But I'm fully committed to it. I certainly want to reserve fiscal capacity in our budget so that we are able to pay it when we can form the agreement.
Governor,
trial courts are saying that if they can't keep more of their reserves, they're going to have to make serious cuts. And I'm sure that those concerns have been voiced by the Chief Justice. The budget allocates more money to the general fund, but it maintains the reserves at 1%. There were some fixes made last year, but do you think that they're not being honest when they say that they are going to have to make these cuts?
Well, everyone says that they need more money. And I would say that everyone desires more, because more is better than less. But nevertheless, we feel we've given the courts more. We want them to be able to manage more effectively, quite frankly, and I think I will leave to Mr. Cohen a more detailed response on that.
Governor, what about the...
What?
Can you talk about the rainy day fund? Whether you think labor would be any more supportive of this plan than what's currently scheduled for the ballot, how they're different?
Well, the measure we have will be on the ballot unless it's changed. And so I think that provides a lot of incentive to come up with some... better alternative. And my goal is to get a rainy day fund that is more flexible, that is workable. And that's the goal. We are certainly looking to legislative leadership and their ideas, but we do need a rainy day fund to help us. And the reason for that rainy day fund is the volatility. So with that zigzag up and down of capital gains spending, the only way to offset that is to have money in reserve, and that's what I intend to do.
Governor,
unless people want to not tax capital gains, and I think that would be a much heavier lift.
Governor, what about the water bond? Do you expect to have the water bond on the ballot this year?
That would be different. No.
How about how your rainy day
I'd leave that to Michael. These you're talking about the cap, and those things are rather technical, and the difficulty in drawing one is you don't know what the world's going to look like in a few years. And they're all premised on flows of money in, and the money comes in at different times. And sometime, for example, in the cap that exists today, it doesn't allow spending down debt. It counts that as just spending. Well, paying off debt is not a form of spending. It's putting you in a much better fiscal condition. So I direct Michael. We don't have the final form. We're going to work with the legislature on that. But you have the general outlines.
Governor, you talk a lot about put a lot of emphasis on lowering the wall of debt, but I didn't see in there, except in future years, any reimbursements to counties for reimbursable mandates. Could you address that issue and why that's put off, given your partners in a lot of so many programs and services?
Why we didn't do what to the counties?
provide the money for the money that's owed in the wall of debt for counties, reimbursable mandates?
Well, that's part of the... I'm going to let Michael handle that. Michael, what do we owe in the counties?
We do, in the accelerated pay down the wall of debt.
Mike, could you...
So we would completely pay off that the existing $25 billion wall of debt by 2017-18, and that includes the amounts owed on reimbursable mandates to counties.
But if I may follow then, but you don't set aside any money for 14-15 for counties, to the best of the way I read it. That's later, and I want to know why you're not taking steps
that's
currently.
That's consistent with budget agreements from the last couple of years, that 14-15 was already set in law in terms of the suspensions of mandates.
Thank you.
Governor, you want the water bond on the ballot this year?
Well, that's, you know, we the world is changing with these serious drought conditions, but I think I'll withhold judgment on that at this point.
Governor, there's been a lot of talk about growing poverty in California and the unevenness of the economic recovery. Can you talk a little bit about what your budget does to address some of those problems that the advocates are saying that it doesn't do enough?
Okay. First of all, we signed the largest minimum wage in the country. We're expanding billions of dollars for our schools to be directed to low-income families, kids that come from families of low income and do not speak English at home, or foster care kids. That is really giving the fish hook that they can fish with. I mean, we're trying to create the opportunity for people to climb out of lower income status. In addition to that, we're expanding Medi-Cal, we're enriching the services, we're expanding it to more people, and certainly health care insurance is something very valuable and will enable low income people to take care of their other needs. In general, the macro redistribution that is occurring, it's global. It's happening in China. It's happening in Europe. It's happening throughout the United States. And California is not immune to that. We did, you know, we have a pretty strong safety net. I think it compares with other major states and is better than most of the states. So, again, there's always a gap between what we'd like and what we're able to do. This is a prudent budget. If people want more for income support, they'll have to take it from something else. And I think we ought to live within our means. We're a relatively high tax state. I don't think that's an avenue. We've committed a lot of funds, and I think education and good health are certainly the way out of poverty. And if other ideas are proposed, I'll be glad to consider them.
No,
wait, what?
That the state can take to address some of those issues, or do you think we're largely at the whims of some of these national and international?
Well, the big issue in poverty is not having enough money. So one thing is to provide money, and we do that through CalWORKs. And we provide training, and we provide child care, and we provide in-home supportive services to the tune of several billion dollars. So there's a lot of things we're doing, but in a society with the structure of inequality that we have, there'll never be a point then that you won't be able to say, can you do more? We can always do more, but I really think California, relative to the rest of the country, is doing a very credible job in responding to the needs of our people.
Governor, on the issue of prisons really quickly, and looking at your budget, it looks to me when you talk about older inmates, sick inmates, and then possibly some changing of the credits for people and how they accrue them, it seems as though you're kind of extending an olive branch to the judges in a way that maybe I haven't seen you say over the last year.
Well, we're working as collaboratively as we can, and I want to get the job done. So I'd put it there.
Is that a change in your thinking, though, about letting those people possibly?
Well, no. My job is to protect the public safety of California. I work very closely with the representatives of law enforcement, and I'm doing everything I can to maintain the laws that we have. But where the court are absolutely insistent, then I respond, and that's what we're doing.
Governor,
and that represents
follow
that.
On that with the prison.
What?
Follow
prisons, you have criticized your predecessors for using what you've called tricks in the budget. But you're assuming a two-year extension from these judges who have been not real friendly to the state's interest. I'm just wondering why you did that and what you plan to do if they don't allow a two-year extension.
We're going to buy out-of-state beds, and we think we're going to get it done. And I don't think it'll be a major adjustment. So there's no trick. It's very clear. We think we're going to get the extension. If we don't, then we'll do the best we can to make sure that we have the capacity to continue incarcerating people that are there by operation of law.
Fund, but in the special fund, to implement the fracking regulations that go into place this year that you signed, do you know how much of an increase you're setting in the per barrel regulatory fee and how many positions you're going to be able to create so that you can assure the people of California you're going
to
carry out
this? I'm going to leave that to Mr. Cohen. I will say we are increasing our inspectors for the trains. As you know, California only supplies a third of its oil, and to the extent that we don't derive oil from California, we have to import it. Most of it's come in ships, but increasingly it's going to come in trains. And that requires inspectors, and the budget has an increase in inspectors to do everything we can to guard against accidents, as we've seen in the other parts of the country, three times.
Governor, your thoughts on calls for an oil severance tax?
What? Yeah, I don't think this is the year for new taxes. I went up and down the state campaigning for Proposition 30. I said it was temporary. It is going to be temporary. I just think we ought to do everything we can to learn to live within our means before going back again and trying to get more taxes.
Governor, you talk about the history of the budget and how people have made poor decisions in the past that led to some of these deficits, locking in new spending. What makes you think that this time is going to be different?
Well, I think the last 3 years have been different, and the budgets have been leading us down a path of fiscal stability. And when I ran for governor, I said, no smoke and mirrors, I'm going to tell you the truth. And the truth is, we've been paying down debt, we've been cutting programs, we got the people to approve of taxes, and we'll do it, continue to do that. I see no reason.
Governor, given these large surpluses, in retrospect, was Prop 30?
Wait, I don't. I just want to look at that. No. That little. Sorry. Look how little that is. That compared to that. I mean, that says it all.
The rest of my question, Governor, was given the projections that that there are some surpluses. I won't say they're huge. Was in retrospect, did we need Prop 30?
Yeah, we sure did.
In retrospect, sir, did we need it? There are some who say we didn't need it. The economy came back.
We're sure going to use it. I think we needed it. Hey, if we knew everything at any moment about the future, it'd be a different kind of world. But certainly there was a lot of reductions, and particularly in our schools. So I think it was appropriate, and I do think it's fair, given the questions about inequality. We are asking those who are very privileged, who benefited from a 30% increase in the stock market in 2012. There's no wage earners, or not very many of them, that got 30% pay raises. So I do think there's an equity component to Proposition 30, and then there's a stabilizing component. And when you look at the long-term liabilities, we have plenty of obligations to take care of.
Governor, two other states, Colorado and Washington, have legalized marijuana. Do you favor efforts to legalize marijuana in California?
I think we ought to kind of watch and see how things go in Colorado.
Governor, can you talk about how the budget helps college students?
What? What's that again? You guys are a little rusty.
Talk about investing more money in that. What the significance of that?
Well, the significance is that there are a number of elderly or disabled people that need assistance, and California, more than any other state, provides a very generous amount of funding to help poor families under our Medi-Cal program take care of disabled and elderly people. Often, in most cases, are their relatives. So it does support low-income families at a very a point of real difficulty and often crisis. And so I think that would count as our effort to deal with inequality.
And potentially in the long run saves the state money.
Well, that's the whole point of our coordinated care initiative, to link the in-home supportive services with other decisions, other medical decisions, and try to reduce nursing home commitments, keep people in their home, and otherwise return people to health. Yeah.
Can you talk about how this budget helps college students who had to endure huge tuition increases over recent years?
It helps them in two ways, by holding tuition flat, and by encouraging the university and the colleges to enable students to get through within 4 years instead of the much longer period that seems to increasingly be the order of the day.
Can you talk about the carrot and stick approach you're taking to funding UCCSU? You're trying to use some of the money that you're giving them to encourage them to change what they do.
I do think that it used to be 4 years and free. Now, in many cases, it's 6 years and expensive. You know, $4,000 to $6,000, $7,000 for Cal State, $12,000 for UC, and then all the living expenses. So, I do think we don't want to keep kids in college any longer than we have to, and we have to find ways of reducing the cost structure by either making the curriculum more flexible, finding ways of using our teaching resources more productively, or employing online technologies in various ways, or other ways. I just think we're in a new world when the prices of getting a room and the prices of tuition and the prices of books are so much higher that argues very strongly for making sure that students can get their degree and get about their lives as much sooner than is the case for hundreds of thousands today.
Governor Farmer wants you to declare a drought emergency now. Why won't you?
We have a water task force that I've set up. We're meeting today on that, and I'm very aware of the problems of the drought. We had another one in 1977 that I had to deal with, and we'll take whatever steps we can in collaboration with the state's farmers to deal with water, and also the urban people have to do their part. So we're taking it very carefully, but don't think that a paper from the governor's office is going to affect the rain. We are doing what we can do in terms of water exchanges, and we'll do other things as we get down the road. That seems to be probably enough, at least from my point of view. Okay. Michael, why don't you come over here and respond?
Yeah.
Follow up on the
sure,
please,
and let me take this one follow-up, then I wanted to run through some numbers, hit the other follow-ups, and take more of your questions. So go. I'll let you get ahead of the game.
A little confused here, because every budget is a fresh start. Every budget has to be approved differently every year based on circumstances, and yet you're saying because we had a deal in the 13-14 budget, we can't change the deal to speed up payments for reimbursable mandates for counties. I don't quite get that, and maybe you can explain that a little bit.
Sure. I mean, basically, this modest surplus there is the cumulative result of all of the agreements we've made over the last few years. So if we just sort of started afresh and scrapped all the agreements we've made since Governor Brown took office, we wouldn't have a surplus at all. So we're very committed to paying down the wall of debt, as you know, very committed to our county partners, and we are very much supportive of paying off the mandate dollars that we owe them. It's just a matter of picking which liability in which year, and this year we've put an emphasis and a priority on making sure schools have their deferrals eliminated and eliminating the economic recovery bonds.
Thank you.
Sure. So as people leave, I did just want to give a public thank you to all of the staff of the Department of Finance who worked very hard on putting together the budget, as well as everyone else in the administration. This really is a major team effort that requires an unbelievable amount of work from everyone in the administration, and I just wanted to thank all of them for that. to run through just a couple quick numbers before I hit the follow-up to the questions. On the economy, the budget is built on a continued economic recovery, but it remains modest. We're expecting personal income growth of 4.6% this year in 2014 and 5% in 2015. Our revenues are clearly doing well, largely based on the personal income tax and capital gains, as the chart showed. Proposition 98, just to explain the $10 billion investment, it's because revenues are up, the minimum guarantee is up in 12-13, 13-14, as well as the growth in 14-15, so that $10 billion it will be paid all in the coming budget, but it's attributable to three fiscal years. It allows us to eliminate more than $6 billion of deferrals to K-12 school districts and community colleges, as well as make a $4.5 billion further investment in the local control funding formula and a $400 million programmatic investment in the community colleges to improve student success at the community colleges. The budget stabilization account, we are making the Proposition 58 constitutional 3% of revenue transfers for the first time in since 2007. That amounts to $3.2 billion. Under current constitutional provisions, half of it goes as a supplemental payment to the economic recovery bonds. For those of you new to budget, $15 billion of economic recovery bonds were approved by the voters in 2004, basically to help pay for those three red bars there. And so by paying them off, they'll be completely done in April of 2015 under this plan. We'd finally be done paying for those three budget years from the early 2000s. Our cash situation, much, much better than it has been over the last few years. There are no cash deferrals to our local governments or schools, and our annual cash borrowing that we do to meet cash flow is down from where it's been. We're assuming $3.5 billion this year, which in the current year we're doing $5.5 billion, and it's been a much higher level in previous years. So moving on to follow-up questions, and then I'll take yours. So first on the corrections questions, just in terms of how we built the budget, we needed to assume something. Negotiations are still ongoing with the three-judge panel, as you heard. So we've assumed a two-year extension, and if we get that two-year extension based on SB 105 last summer, we do have $81 million in the Recidivism Reduction Fund that allows us to make investments to reduce recidivism and prevent future crimes. If we don't get the extension, the money is still in the budget, and we won't have a budgetary problem. We'll just have to change what we're spending that those dollars on, and we will change our focus more to capacity to avoid early release, as opposed to being able to make those $81 million in investments. The court reserves, it's not really a dollar issue. It's more a where the reserve funds are. So what the reserve policy change from 2012 does is it moves reserve funds to the state level judiciary under the Judicial Council's control rather than local individual courts. The reason for that is there was great disparity among individual courts, and it's sort of one of the key final pieces to 1997 moving to a state-funded trial court system where the council will be able to figure out where the highest and best use of those dollars have been. We do add $100 million in the budget for trial courts to help them continue to transition to the new system. Rainy Day Fund, just to walk through that, so we under the current constitution, Proposition 58 was approved by the voters in 2004. It requires a balanced budget and an annual 3% transfer into the budget stabilization account, the Rainy Day Fund, unless suspended by gubernatorial executive order. There's ACA 4 that's scheduled to be on the November ballot. That one is basically driving off a 20-year revenue linear regression, which gets extremely complicated. And as the governor said, there's not much flexibility. In addition, it doesn't do anything regarding Proposition 98. So Proposition 98's requirements are still in place, and the reserve is basically all for the non-98 side of the budget. What we're proposing to do is we're not changing any of the Proposition 98 calculations, but we are smoothing out the spending of those dollars over time. We're basically asking for a constitutional creation of a Prop 98 reserve so that we can avoid the types of layoffs that schools had to endure during the Great Recession. Another big change would be instead of basing it on this 20-year revenue regression, we'd instead base it on our most volatile revenue source, capital gains. So any year in which our revenues are based on more than 6.5% capital gains, the extra increment would go into the rainy day fund. Final big difference, I think, from current law in ACA 4 is the ability to pay down debts and liabilities. So under ACA 4, you wouldn't be able to make sort of extra supplemental payments on any of these things. What we've done to date and what we want to propose continuing to do is kind of balance saving money for the future as well as chipping away at all of these huge liabilities. And so the amount of money wouldn't change, but whether you could spend it, you would either be able to spend it on extra payments on liabilities or put it into the rainy day fund. So I think that covers that. Just hit me if I missed a follow-up question, but otherwise let's go to Anthony. Yeah, I'm sorry, I caught his eye for
it. I've got a question about these infrastructure finance districts.
Yeah.
This is sort of to replace redevelopment. It says the administration will work on legislation to make it easier for locals to raise money, including a 55% vote. Is that a tweak of Prop 13?
No, absolutely not. Infrastructure financing districts exist in state law today, and the two-thirds vote requirement to create them was a decision by the legislature when they statutorily created the infrastructure financing district. So there's nothing constitutional that would even require a vote of the people on creating an infrastructure financing district, just like there wasn't a constitutional requirement on a vote of the people to create a redevelopment agency. So it's a statutory change. It's a lowering of an existing statutory barrier to their creation, but not a constitutional one. And Prop 13 had nothing to do with.
So there wouldn't have to be anything on the ballot.
Correct.
To lower.
It's all a statutory change.
And the idea is to have a 55% vote of a local to create one of these districts and to approve any bonds that would be sold by the district?
Basically, the voters approve the overall construct of that, so they could in the vote could determine whether or not they need the bond authority or not. But basically, there's taxing. It's a 50%. Is that me? There's a 55% vote to decide whether or not you want to utilize tax increment financing. And then the same way redevelopment worked, the bonds are then sold as against that tax increment. And so there wouldn't necessarily need to be.
So they don't need additional approval to sell bonds. They would have the ability to
sell bonds. Under the law. The key differences between redevelopment and IFDs is more specific on what types of projects can be funded. You have to get positive okay from anyone, any other local governments that are affected. So redevelopment, they just had statutory authority to take a county or a special district's property tax increment. Right. Here, the special district or the county would need to agree to participate in it, and there's no effect on schools or the state general fund because of their participation.
Michael, do you expect that any of the $10 billion in Prop 98 money is going to be used to pay down the cost of CalSTRS?
Not in the budget. As the governor said, we are convening stakeholder discussions And we expect we will have a plan in place for the 15-16 budget, so a year from now. But at this point, the $10 billion is being invested in the local control funding formula and eliminating the deferrals to schools.
Michael, can you talk a little bit about the corporation tax? You're projecting that the revenue from Prop 39 is about $150 million less than you thought.
Right.
And I'm wondering if you can say why you think that's happening. And then similarly, you've got a trend toward large refunds related to taxpayer dispute resolution. What is going on there?
Sure. For those of you who've been following the corporate tax for a number of years, you've seen both us and the legislative analyst have fairly large swings in our revenue forecasts from time to time. It's getting increasingly difficult to forecast the corporate tax given all of the tax policy changes that have been made over the last decade. In terms of Proposition 39, the Franchise Tax Board, when it originally passed, was using 2010 tax data as its base estimate. They are now using 2011 data, so 1 year more recent, and changes in individual corporations, how they're distributing their sort of their three factors. The large corporations, if they have a change, you can have pretty significant swings. So that's basically we're using more recent data, and the data is telling us that a number of large corporations had changes in their circumstances between 2010 and 2011.
So their factors changed enough that it would make a huge difference in the amount of revenue you think you're going to get? Okay.
Mike, does this
corporations
have relocated?
The single the mandatory single sales factor that we now have is all based on sales within the state of California. So it's driving off of how much they sell here, so the whole point of the policy change was a corporation wouldn't have a disincentive to set up here, own property in California, have California employees, and so it's driving simply on what their sales are, and the revenue difference is really kind of comparing to a theoretical world of if Prop 39 hadn't passed, what they would have otherwise paid.
So it doesn't have anything to do with change in corporate behavior.
It's just a different estimate, and it has to do with different corporate finances that have changed between 2010 and 2011, and will continue to refine the number going forward.
Does it mean that sales are down? I mean, if the sales factor is what it's based on,
it has more to do with. It's all relative to its how their sales compare to property compared to payroll. So
Okay.
You've got multiple moving parts, and so I'm not sure you could tag it just to one of those moving parts.
Can you address the large refunds on tax disputes? What is there any particular type of dispute you're?
No. It's more just a general trend based on that some corporations had put funds on deposit in prior years to avoid penalties and.
It's the large corporate underpayment penalty or anything in particular?
That's certainly has changed corporate behavior in terms of how much they've paid in certain years, and so we're just adjusting based on how much they ultimately owed versus how much they thought they might owe.
Michael, can you talk about why you're expecting a bigger surplus than the LAO expected when they put out their November report?
We're actually fairly similar. I think they're a little bit higher than us. They were at 5.6.
Not for just the 14. Not for this June. They had about 2.4. You guys have about 4.2.
Oh, in terms of just through the current year. I think the biggest factor is a lot of prior year adjustments that they didn't know about. So every time in January. When we build the budget, we basically go back to look at our departments and how much did they save. There were some big you know, sort of lower spending than the LAO reflected. There was also we were also constantly updating our revenue accrual. So lots and lots of moving pieces, but kind of that prior year adjustment.
So basically, there's less money spent or more money left over than the LAO knew about.
Yeah, I think that's it.
And one last thing. The unfunded liabilities chart over there is a lot bigger than it used to be. Usually you guys just talk about retirement liabilities. Why bring up all these other things this year?
Actually, if you go back to May 2011, which was the first time we sort of started talking about the wall of debt and all that, you had charts in that document that pretty much, I think, covered these. The one new one that we are highlighting is the deferred maintenance at $65 billion. That's all of the state's infrastructure where we haven't been sort of keeping up on it. Much of that is in the state's roads. Our state's park system also has a large deferred maintenance. And so that one is a new one, and we're trying to highlight it. Mm-hmm. The budget includes $100 million general fund to start chipping away at that, at parks. And
I think it's
And then there's an overall package, an $815 million deferred maintenance package. That includes the repaying of early of a transportation loan of $350 million mm-hmm. or so. And so we've kind of pieced together a package of $815 million to try to get a handle on our deferred maintenance. Catch up, but clearly we've got many years ahead of us before we'll be able to eliminate that number.
Mr. Michael,
let me go over here and I'll come back.
Oh, just one last question on the courts. They're implementing a new funding method that looks at workload rather than the historical model. Right. They're doing it at like 5% a year plus new funding that they receive. And I'm curious, do you guys think that that's fast enough? Do you think they're doing it in good faith, or are they dragging their heels?
No, I think we've been pleased with the work that the judicial branch has done on the formula, and we expect that this $100 million will go into that and sort of address some of those historical inequities in funding distribution. So, no, they've done a good job on that formula.
Thank you.
Michael, on the courts again, $105 million, is that ongoing or one-time?
Yeah, ongoing.
Okay, and then the pensions language in there. You're talking primarily about the trial court's employees?
There is long-standing sort of disparities in trial court employees in terms of how much they pay to their pensions. It's a remnant of pre-state-funded trial court system. And so there are some employees in the court system that still pay nothing to their pensions. And clearly, with the governor's signing of pension reform in 2012, that was one of the keys that we need to move towards employees paying for roughly half of the normal costs of their pensions. And so we'd like to see all public employees within the state move to that.
But, I mean, how do you do that? You've got 58 different trial court contracts, plus you also have the branch employees, who some of whom do not pay for their pensions.
I didn't say it was easy. It's anything in terms of pension reform is a hard slog, and it takes a dedication at the negotiating table, and it's, you know, you look at what the state's done the last few years, and it's kind of an example of how we think it should go, but it certainly it'll be a challenge for the court system, but we think they need to get there.
Well, is it something that you want to do on the state level? You want to make all negotiations at the state level?
We don't have any proposal regarding changing the court employee relationship at this point.
Do you know what chunk of judiciary contributes for their pensions and how that compares to other branches?
We can follow up with you. I'm remembering $23 million statewide as the number of kind of dollars that aren't being contributed, but we can why don't you follow up with HD and he can get you a little bit more.
And Michael, you may have covered this while somebody like me was out of the room, but it looked like in the documents that you all have teased out what you're calling windfall versus everything else. Am I right on that?
Yeah.
And most of it you're calling windfall. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think we put $4 billion on capital gain windfall, and that's basically the level of capital gains that we're expecting to receive in the current and the upcoming fiscal year above what we view as normal, and normal being kind of the historical average of as a percentage of personal income. So we will always have some level of capital gains, but as the chart really shows, they shoot up and shoot down, and so we're trying to capture the increment of tax revenues that are above that normal, and we've put it at $4 billion, which is roughly the same as what we would say is the modest surplus.
Back to the question of corporate refunds. So it's $600 million and you expect it to continue to rise. Is it because the state was too aggressive in trying to make tax collections? I mean, to what do you attribute this?
Well, we've changed our tax policy to, and this is kind of late 2000s to try to, I mean, part of the way they were balancing the budget was changing tax policy to try to accelerate revenues into earlier years. So to the extent we're seeing higher refunds now, I think that's certainly one of the factors that if it was done to accelerate money and not actually change any liability, this is sort of part of the catch-up phase. Do you guys want to add anything? Okay.
Well, I mean, is net operating losses were suspended, and now people are going to be able to kick those back in. Is
right.
that
we factored all, on the list, all of the legislative changes like the NOLs into our forecast, but I can't tell you that we won't be standing up here a year from now, and I won't be talking about major adjustments to the corporate tax. It's become very, very difficult to forecast because of all of these complicated law changes that have been made over the last decade. So, to the best of our ability, we factor in, the behavior that we're expecting based on the laws. I concerning certainly the corporate tax is sort of roughly a $10 billion tax, so roughly 10% of our general fund revenues, and to have hundreds of millions of dollars swings in a tax that we are not able to pinpoint exactly what's causing them. Sure, that's definitely concerning, and it's an area that my team has dedicated a lot of time to understanding better, but there's more work to be done. We'll certainly keep working at it, because I do want to understand what's going on with the corporate tax much better.
Can you put that budget continuance back
up
on the board?
You bet.
Can you give me a summary of?
Sure.
Okay.
So basically, this chart is a reflection of the benefits of Proposition 30. When you look at the Proposition Minimum Guarantee, this is guaranteed funding for K-14 schools, so K-12 and community college. We were down at $47.2 million. We're now, in the upcoming year, expecting to be at $61.6 billion, growing to nearly $70 billion over the next few years. And that's clearly the benefit of the extra revenues provided by Proposition 30.